the Nasrallah parents' bed, which was at the backside of the house, where Rachel would sleep. She sat in a puddle of blankets with the children because military people and machines would drive through that border area at night and they would shoot into the houses. And there were bullet holes marking the entire home.
We just have 30 seconds, and I just wanted to get your final comment, either Cindy or Craig, on what is happening today.
Amy, that family did everything they could to hold on to that house. They were eventually forced out of that house, and some of them went through seven other houses. Now we hear that they want out of Gaza after 21 years of trying to hold on to their homes and their lives and their futures and their past in Gaza. Like so many people, they want to survive and they want out. I can't imagine what drives them to do that. But that's the situation in Gaza.
I want to thank you both for being with us again, Craig and Cindy Corey, speaking to us from Olympia, Washington. And Tom Dale will link to your piece in Jacobin, Rachel Corey Gave Her Life for Palestine, joining us from London. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now! Check out our website at democracynow.org.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at KBOO.FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programmings of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. Masks and proof of vaccination are required at this time. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hey, KBOO listeners, you want to tune in to PDX Progressive Talk Radio every fourth Wednesday at 7 p.m., where we do a deep dive into issues that matter most to our community. Every month, we're taking on homelessness, community policing, supporting local small businesses, and so much more. We're here to foster solutions and move progressive change. Brought to you by our dedicated team, me, Sherry Morish, and our host, Moses Ross, this show is your go-to for progressive dialogue and local action. Don't miss out on the conversations that are shaping Portland and the Pacific Northwest. Join us on PDX Progressive Talk Radio every fourth Wednesday at 7 p.m. right here on KBOO, where together we're the voice of change.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO FM, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO FM. We are broadcasting live on Monday, March 18th, 2024. I am Cecil Prescott, and I will be your companion for the next hour. I want to thank you for listening, and I want you to encourage those around you to listen as well. If you are listening live, we encourage those of you who would like to share your thoughts and give some information to call, our numbers are 503-231-8187. And so for those who are listening live, the program that is before our program is Democracy Now! And the last segment was a powerful time in which there was reflection on the life of Rachel Corrie, American peace activist who sacrificed her life for Palestinian family. She was a 23-year-old American peace activist from our region, Olympia, Washington. She was a student of Evergreen University College, and she, quite frankly, literally gave her life. She was crushed to death by an Israeli bulldozer on the 16th of March, 2003, while undertaking nonviolent direct action to protect the home of a Palestinian family from demolition. She lived her life, and she was a powerful peace activist. And those of us in this region, and indeed throughout the world, especially as we hear and are in sorrow over what is happening in Palestine at this time, in Gaza in particular, are inspired by Rachel's life and her legacy, and want to honor her on this, the anniversary, the 21st anniversary of her death, of Rachel's death. May the testimony of her life continue, and may all of us be inspired by her desire to create peace and to stand in solidarity with those who suffer. May your memory live long, Rachel. We honor you and thank you for your sacrifice. This is More Talk Radio on your community radio station. And as we talk about Rachel Corrie and reflect a little bit about her life, what I think is important is that she, at the age of 23, recognized a need to stand in solidarity with those who suffer. And she made a commitment, and she dedicated her life to peace activism. What are you called to do? Well, I want to invite those of you who are in the Portland area to do your small part in peace activism. A few weeks ago, we had on this program John Grushow of the War Resisters League. And when he was here, he spoke about a possible proposal before the Portland Public School Board to bring back junior reserve officers training corps in some or all Portland high schools. John was here, and he was concerned about that, and has been for years a peace activist and here in this region. And he wanted all of us, wanted you, to be aware of this possible proposal. If this proposal is allowed to go forward, it would effectively undermine the successes that peace activists have had with the public school in terms of keeping military at bay and restricting military access to our students and cleaning, you know, many of you can talk about military recruiters in schools and whether or not how they impacted you. I'm starting up JROTC, John Rice, would be a big setback in many ways and would further militarize our public schools. Well, there will be a first reading of a proposal to bring back JROTC at Portland Public Schools on Tuesday evening, April 2nd. The meeting starts at 6 p.m. At the Portland Public Schools Administrative Building, 501 North Dixon Street in Portland. People will be there. People from the community will give testimony. And it's important in this era for people to stand up wherever they can. And this is an opportunity, once again, for those who work and desire peace to stand up. So stand up and go to the Portland Public Schools Board meeting on Tuesday, April 2nd at 6 p.m. To state your view on whether or not JROTC should be brought back to some or all or Portland Public Schools. That's what you can do to create change, create a positive change. We all, in our own special way, can make a difference. And on that theme of making a difference, I want to invite those of you who are listening to give us a call and talk about what are signs of things you can do to make a difference this spring. We know that there will be elections. A lot of voter education is taking place, certainly in Oregon, particularly in Portland, where a new city council, new districting, and new ways of voting will take place. A lot of changes are happening. I'm curious about how people are preparing for that. Related to some of those other issues about preparing for educating yourself and your community, what are things that you think that we can do to make a difference, to bring education? And, you know, as there's so much involved in trying to find out information, how do you access information? Are you a person who, when you wake up in the morning, you turn over and you pick up the phone and you look at your favorite app, news site, or social media site? What is that like for you? And talking about social media, I mean, how does social media play a role in your life? What are your primary social media outlets, if any? Recently in the Washington, D.C., as if the, you know, House of Representatives do not have lots of things to worry about, you know, inflation, war. They spent a lot of time talking about social media, particularly social media platforms, TikTok, and a lot of hot air has been blown, eventually leading to the resolution bill passed by the Senate to ban TikTok unless, you know, it is sold to an American company. Now, what are your thoughts about that? Whether or not it is possible. But what I was intrigued was that it was almost as soon as the law was enacted that all of a sudden we saw someone standing up and saying that they are willing to buy TikTok. And lo and behold, who is that person? It's not as if we're not inundated by a small group of people owning social media, but in this case, Trump-era Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, said he wants to buy TikTok. It is, of course, generating a lot of criticism, with some theorizing the app, if bought, will be used to push conservative viewpoints. So think of, for example, the social app formerly known as Twitter and the use of how the owner forced their political viewpoints on. Well, Andrew Staton in Newsweek a few days ago wrote up about what's happening and the possible selling of TikTok. He writes in part, on Wednesday, the House of Representatives voted to pass a bill that would force TikTok parent company ByteDance to divest from the social media platform and sell it to another company because of its ties to the Communist Party, Chinese Communist Party. The bill has raised concern that the app could be banned from use in the U.S., though legislators say that that's not the goal. Well, Mnuchin, who served in the Trump administration, revealed his plan, to purchase the social media platform. He revealed it during an interview. He said he emphasized the importance of maintaining the platform independence, saying that he wouldn't let any tech company control this, so nobody would have more than 10% control. He argued that a decentralized ownership model would lower the risk of excessive control by any one party or person. Now, it remains unclear whether or not that platform can or will be purchased, but he said he would try to negotiate with the U.S. lawmakers and Chinese stakeholders to reach a deal. Something doesn't appear right to me. So people are talking about it all over in terms of, oh no, now things are going to look different. Melanie D'Arrigo, executive director of the Campaign for New York Health, posted on that social media platform formerly known as Twitter, now wealthy politically connected Republicans want to buy TikTok. This isn't about safety. It's about forcibly controlling the content of 170 million American consumers. Huh. So what are your thoughts? Social media, about peace activism, what it is that you can do. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And we'll go to our first caller. Good morning, April. How are you this morning?
Morning, Cecil. I am doing well. How are you?
I am doing well for the moment, you know, while the weather is nice before it changes back.
I know. I can't help thinking that this is just, it's wonderful, but it's unnatural.
Yes.
Anyway, I do not use social media, but it does play a huge part in my life. I actually used to be on social media, and I was a library user because I don't have a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And so during the pandemic, when they were shut down for a while, I realized that it really didn't add anything to my life, and I really didn't miss it.
Oh.
And it was one less thing to do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of suspicious of social media from the start, and some of the things I heard during the pandemic really confirmed that I didn't want to go back on social media. And I'm not sure what the answer is, but I am grateful that I am not connected to social media anymore. And I think we are kind of seeing some people's worst fears as far as social media amplifying some voices and not others. And I'm not sure what the answer is at this point. I don't think we can go back where we were. But I also think, as somebody who's been a community organizer, that true organizing does not happen except for face-to-face.
Oh.
You can organize on the computer. You can go viral. But as far as getting people to actually show up, even if they say they're going to on the computer, it usually doesn't happen, at least not as much as have confirmed that they said they were going to show up.
Hmm. Well, let me ask you a question. I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt you, mm-hmm. so I'll let you finish first.
No, that's okay.
Okay. Well, I wanted to ask, because you said the importance of face-to-face as opposed to in terms of organizing and how that makes a difference. Expand on that a little bit, difference, because, you know, you mentioned about, you know, during the pandemic, things were, you know, people were separated, and social media was a way in which people connected to one another, and we saw a way in which people organize. But I think you're hitting on something that's really important. So expand on why face-to-face organizing is different than sitting, you know, on your phone at a coffee shop and pressing a button.
Well, as far as organizing goes, I mean, even when I use social media, I would find myself getting kind of sucked into signing all these petitions and doing all these things and wanting to go to these protests. And it's like, at the protests, no one talked to each other. There was no networking. So it used to be that when organizing was more face-to-face, a protest, you know, which people had usually seen, either they'd heard about on KBOO when you guys used to have a community calendar, which mm-hmm. I really miss, or they'd read a flyer, or they'd talk to a friend who was going. You had a reason to be involved, I mean, beyond the cause. And the protests were more of a networking opportunity. So, like, you found out about all the other things that were going on in the community. People were handing out flyers. Flyers aren't very common anymore, and protests are no longer networking opportunities. Mm. And if we're going to change things, I think that's what we need.
I think that's a very important point. One last thing before I let you go. In your view, is it different depending on, you know, in terms of view of social media and use of social media, is it different depending on one's generation?
I think so. I mean, if I had grown up with social media, I might be this frustrated, but I don't think that it would be as clear to me what's going on. And, you know, if you've grown up without those connections, I mean, like, say, if somebody was, you know, a kid or a teenager when the pandemic hit, and, you know, computers, what they associate with their social connections, I don't think you really have anything to compare it to. So,
right.
Yeah, I think that, you know, generation probably has a lot to do with it, although not that much. I mean, I see an awful lot of people my age, you know, can't talk about anything but the computer. And I even hear on a lot of the talk shows on cable anymore, you know, people are talking about the latest memes or what's gone viral. And, you know, I'm not saying it has no value. It just, it's not what you think it is.
Okay. It's not what you think it is. I like that. Exactly. Yeah. Hey, thank you so much, April, and continue to stay connected over the telephone and face-to-face with people.
Thank you. I will. You too, Cecil.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You as well. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. Today is Monday, the 18th of March. And our numbers are 503-231-8187. April just called and shared some of her thoughts about social media, her view of how it impedes organizing, and her perspective on how different communities and different generations might be impacted by it. What are your thoughts? Let's hear what our next caller, Santiago, has to say. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Cecil?
I'm doing okay. Thank you.
So wonderful. So I think that I find the TikTok sale hilarious, because at the end of the day, what it is it's just, you know, the social media for a lot of people is like the only reliable news source. Mm-hmm. In lieu of having any sort of like media impartial media literacy. And we know that like a lot of TikTok is very pro-Palestine. And so on the one hand, it is partially like this whole Red Scare thing that is connected to the CCP, somehow is connected to the CCP. But that's like saying, oh, well, you know, don't download Facebook because it's connected to the U.S. government. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they, you know, I mean, the truth of the matter is that America will be irrelevant within the next decade in terms of being a world power. And what we're watching is a toddler who is flailing and tantruming because they can't have their way anymore. And you know, we're going to lose, the United States is going to lose power. That's inevitable, but we get to choose how we lose that power. And what we do with that loss of power ultimately, and there's a lot of people who can't see themselves outside of being the world bully. They need that sustains them on some level, because they can be like, well, you know, things are bad here, but at least it's not, you know, North Korea, or it's not China. But it's like, you know, I just read a thing where like the average retirement age in China right now is like 54 years old, and we're struggling to hang on to 65.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Where people are having, and it doesn't mean that China's perfect in any way. They have a lot of things we could learn from, but that's always been the product of the Red Scare, is that we, you know, when they say that America is democratic, America, you know, promotes freedom, it's democracy for those who have money. It's freedom for those who have money. And the only real change that's been made is by the working class, who has banded together to make those changes. They piggyback by, you know, doing political recuperation to be, you know, like how they do with Martin Luther King or Muhammad Ali, how they try to recuperate a handful of figures. But at the end of the day, this is something that they're having a hard time controlling, because on the one hand, people just aren't patriotic anymore, because we know that patriotism is just another religion, and you know, and we're waking up to a lot of those things.
Certainly.
You know, so
let me ask you, because of the point you're making in terms of waking up to these things. You know, early on, you identify media literacy. Could you expand on that? What is it, and how are people? How can they gain media literacy?
Well, one of the things that I promote to people, like, as an easy way to start, is there's a great app called Ground News, which gives you the same news story from multiple sources, mm-hmm. right? So you can get, and it'll tell you whether it's left, right, or center. And I have issues with what they label left, because a lot of it is just liberal. It's still liberal content. It's just, it's maybe slightly more radical in presentation, but at the end of the day, a lot of them aren't really promoting outside of the system thought.
All right.
But here's the other thing, is you have to be able to read both sides of the story, and you have to find ways to, like, for instance, like anything that's written about China a lot of it can be traced back to one person named Adrian Zenz, who believes he has a God-given mission to destroy the Chinese Communist Party. But a lot of what's written in Western media about the Chinese Communist Party comes from that, or China anyway, how they conflate the two. But you have to be able to know what to look for, and part of it just starts with, like, getting together with a group of people who have some sort of understanding. You know, social media for me is about connecting with comrades, you know, being a part of, like, my various revolutionary groups that I, that, you know, that we organize with. And, you know, it's, you know, you have to be willing to, you have to be willing to engage honestly and in a way that takes your ego out of the situation. Well, you know, you can't engage with wanting to do the right thing, but still want to preserve your ideas about what you think about the world. As you say, like, you know, like, the world is, you know, in terms of, like, how, you know, secular humanism would view things, it's like the world is what the world is, and all we as humans do is try to categorize that. Right. But those categorizations of our own making, and we try to label things, but a lot of things fall outside of labels, unfortunately. And we have to be willing to follow the evidence wherever it leads. And even if it challenges something that we hold dear to ourselves, those are the things that we must be willing to challenge if we want to have real literacy.
Wow, fantastic. I think you raised some excellent points because of the need to get information. And you said a couple of things I want to highlight before I have to let you go was in terms of needing to read both sides of the story, which is sounds good. But you also mentioned that you have a cohort, a group of people who, and I'm projecting, who share a philosophy or way of viewing, who can together this cohort you can read and struggle because quite frankly for me I find it really hard to like read or listen to like really radically conservative news outlets, but as you suggested, if I'm with my cohort it might be make it not easier but give me a place to debate, to struggle, to wrestle with people, to try to come to an understanding. Go ahead. I'll let you.
And I'm going to say one more. I just wanted to say one more thing. You know, for anybody who's listening, you know, when you challenge your deeply held beliefs, it causes a lot of anxiety. And yes. I get that. It can be scary. But the thing is that we have there. The close enemy of uncertainty is anxiety. We have to recognize that everything in life is uncertain no matter how we lay it down, but that uncertainty doesn't have to make us anxious. We just have to live in that uncertainty and be comfortable with it. You know, so if you're really looking to make a difference, then you have to be willing to question everything, including those things that you hold dearest to yourself. And if it passes scrutiny, great. If it doesn't, you got to find a way to let it go, because that's how these right wing whack jobs get into your head. You know, whether they're conservative or liberal, that's how they get into your head and make you believe things or back things that don't benefit you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your advice. And I hope you have a good day. Thank you so much, Santiago.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. Our last caller, Santiago, was sharing some of his thoughts in terms of how to understand, analyze media, and in terms of media literacy. Thank you for your suggestions. And I appreciate a quote you said, the close enemy of anxiety is uncertainty. I need to think about that for a while. Thank you so much. 503-231-8187. Let's hear from Arthur. Good morning, Arthur. Thank you for waiting.
Oh, thank you for taking my call, Cecil. I think I'm going to give you a quick thought I had. I think social media is pretty much a dull distraction from reality. And I made a short list here, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
I'm going to tell you a couple of things that instead of actually looking at a computer, because I'm visually impaired, you might try, I've just made a short list here, eating better, riding a bicycle, go for a run, play in a rock band, have sex, go to a bar, join a church, read a book, learn a new language, join a soccer team. I could go on and on and on.
Hey, I love that list. It's so broad. So like, oh no, I'm not into this. And then you have something from all the right field or left field or, hey, those
yeah,
great.
My point is anything is better than staring at a screen and hitting buttons on a keyboard or playing with your cell phone. I mean, I can take a train and watch people not even speak to each other on a train.
That's it. You know, that's interesting. You mentioned that because coming to the station this morning, you know, I was on the bus, and you know, everyone's, you know, on their phones, not speaking to one another. And then I said, well, how has that changed? And, you know, maybe it hasn't changed because, you know, 30 years ago, people were on the train, not on their cell phones, but they were reading newspapers. So maybe things haven't changed.
Maybe that's similar.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Well, hey, go ahead.
Yeah, my thought is I think that people should really try to, I think what they call social media is actually it's more like anti-social media. You know, it's like separating people. But, you know, that's maybe that's called I'm an old man.
Oh.
You know, okay. 60 years old. But I think people should really explore life to its fullest.
Okay.
And not be attached to a electronic device. But that, you know, that's my own opinion.
And that's a hope. I mean, that's a hope. And I think it's sort of like we all know we're supposed to eat better, but we don't. And but you're right. And maybe if we, you know, put down the phone and interact with others, things would be better. I appreciate what you had to say. And hey.
No, thanks. Cecil, thanks for your I'm going to hang up, but thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I hope some people think about things in general. I'm not asking them to agree with me, but I hope people think about what their daily life is like. So have a wonderful day, Cecil.
Thank you so much. And you are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil, and our numbers here to call is 503-231-8187. Our last caller, Arthur, was sharing some of his thoughts on social media. He's not a fan. He said it's a dull distraction and keeps us from things we ought to focus on. And then he brilliantly just came up with a list of things that you can do as opposed to looking at your phone all day, you know. Eat better, exercise, join a rock band, have sex, join a church. And you can add on to the list, crocheting. You needed to learn how to crochet or rock climbing. There's a whole sort of lots of things you can do. But, you know, let me get off of my high moral ground and just admit that, you know, I think like many of you that because I'm a citizen of the world, I am connected to social media in ways that I am not necessarily proud of, but yeah, I'm one of those who have look at all those apps, and so I want to ask, how do you decide, how do you keep away from just falling, I think one of our callers mentioned, falling deeper and deeper into social media. It's so simple just to be looking at your phone all day and just go from story to story. But what is social media? Do you How is it used in a good way? What are things that you do that you find necessary? TikTok. Do you use TikTok? Are you creative? Do you use it for your business? Do you use it for ways in which you communicate with those? I've noticed and think it's been observed that different social media platforms appeal to different people, different generation, different concerns. So depending on your area of concern, your age, your location, one social media platform might be, you might prefer to another. So give me a call. I'd like to know, are you, I don't want to promote any particular one, but I'm interested in just knowing how many you are acquainted, read different platforms. So from platforms such as the one the former president uses, or other platforms that you might find appropriate. Now, be truthful. Do you really avoid Instagram and Facebook and Messenger and TikTok? And if you do, how do you maintain your connection with those or around you? It becomes a challenge to do that. So let me just say a little bit more about the proposal that former Trump appointee has to buy TikTok, and it doesn't smell right. So anyway, in this article in Newsweek, Newsweek, of course, reached out to Mnuchin for comment. I don't think they've received comment yet. But other people have commented. I mentioned Melanie DiRaggio, who said Republicans in Congress pushed to ban TikTok and force a sale. Now, wealthy, politically connected Republicans want to buy TikTok. This isn't about safety. It's about forcibly controlling the content 170 million Americans consume. Now, just pause. I'm going to pause for a second. 170 million Americans use TikTok. That's amazing. And radio host Dean Obidala says if Trump Mnuchin buys TikTok, it will be turned into a pro-MAGA platform to help spew hate, bigotry, and elect MAGA candidates. And Mehdi Hasan, who is a progressive commentator who lost a job on a media network because of what he says. He says, to be clear, if Mnuchin gets TikTok and Musk has Twitters, that's two of the most influential messaging platforms on the planet in the hands of MAGA and their allies in an election year, and with both purchases done on the Democratic White House and Senate watch. Wow. Let's hear what someone with some wisdom has to say. Let's go to Janet. Good morning, Janet. Thank you for calling.
Hey there. I've been kind of a regular, and I missed the beginning up here from Mount Hood.
Oh, yes.
The Brooklyn lady upstairs from Dave Dellinger.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that the problem I think about wanting to slip into this happy little place where there's no problems when we're getting live streamed a genocide.
Yes.
I mean, you're thinking like it's back when we stopped the Vietnam War because we saw body bags coming back of our people. And now that we recognize that we're getting live streamed, the rubble and thousands and thousands of innocent babies and people under the rubble, I'm thinking that the fact that this is being live streamed, that we have access to it, that we don't want to take a blind eye to what's being perpetrated. And so I'm thinking that it is very difficult for me to convey to you how I live in the most beautiful place in the world, and it's idyllic. And some people are thinking, well, as long as it's over there and it's not here. But to recognize that there's people that are making a lot of money off of this horrific situation in the world, and it's a beautiful day, and I'm up here in the lovely neighborhood, but I can't say this is not an important thing that we're only getting because of this social media.
No,
because big censorship.
Let me ask you, because you raised this issue in terms of media and access, and you know, and the comparison with, say, Vietnam. So, you know, one thing I recall from that era was, you know, it certainly wasn't live stream, but weekly, I can't remember the day, you heard, you know, Walter Cronkite saying, you know, this week, you know, 575 Americans were killed, you know, 3,000 enemy. And so you heard that report, and it began to make a difference. You mentioned in terms of live streaming, and we're seeing the genocide as it's happening. Is that an advantage in making people feel differently, or is there no difference now than, you know, during Vietnam in terms of getting people riled up and to take action?
Well, I think that there's pretty hard to say that individually. It's actually in the Talmud, because I'm a Jewish Buddhist person, and my grandpa opened up the synagogue. In the Talmud, it says, we don't see things as they are, we see things as we are. So it's pretty hard to generalize if it makes a difference. But I think the young people are rising up, and there's people, young people in the streets saying, don't stop talking about Palestine. However, because of the media, the mainstream media is so bought out that you don't see a live stream. You don't even see any talk about it. Mm-hmm. You'd be thinking there's like Israel apologists, and now Schumer's getting up there saying, maybe we want to back it down a little bit. We've got an election coming up. But in speaking of Vietnam, I thought it got to be that they were really nervous. It was a big event,
mm-hmm.
the Democratic National Convention. It was a big event because people knew a little bit. They weren't being live-streamed like we are now. So there's things are really accelerating to the nines. However, people who are just like having like in Israel, maybe 70% of the people, they're not all like nice humanitarian lefty kind of Jewish people like my family was, but they're far, far, far right. I'm thinking, I don't really want to go with, if you listen to Electric Intifada, but how it's blood-curdling, mm-hmm. how they've been talked into the idea that Palestinians are not people, and even the babies are all like terrorists. It's very bizarre what people think.
It is. And just in terms of how we're othering people, and I just wanted to pause because when you said that there aren't people, I was just reminded of some of the things the former president said about migrants here coming to this country. He said something, you know, in the rally this in a few days ago, you know, some people call them people, but I don't call them people. That othering is so dangerous.
Okay, like just one thing I just want to weigh in about this. It's not just about the red and the blue, because Hillary went on about the deplorables.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Biden won't stop funding this war. And so it's not about the red and the blue thing. I think the thing that I really appreciate about my Buddhist practice, good and evil are totally connected inside of us. And if we don't purify the mind of people to raise our consciousness, then to push back on the evil in ourselves, even in the Quran, it's like we really have to not say, oh, it's the former yada yada, whoever, red or blue.
Mm-hmm.
There's something bigger that's going on, and the money problem that we have, we don't have a spiritual context or a moral compass. It's all about how much money some people are making, and imperialism is the problem.
I agree with you. Hey, thank you so much, Janet. I appreciate your call. And someday we're just going to, I need to just go have coffee with you because I really want to know more about Dave Dellinger and what that, wow. You must
hey,
have
listen,
some great
yeah,
story.
Come up here and we'll do radio up the mountain. We'll call it MOFO, Mountain Folks.
Hey, love it. Yeah. Hey, okay. Well, you have a great day. Thank you so much. You're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil, and you are you, and you can be right here by calling 503-231-8187. We've been talking about social media today, the impact. We began by just reflecting on Rachel Corrie, the peace activist who died 21 years ago by standing... standing before an Israeli bulldozer as she tried to protect her Palestinian home. Rachel, may your memory live forever. Let's go to our next caller, Mark. Good morning, Mark. Thank you for waiting.
Good morning, Cecil. Thanks for a very interesting and important discussion. To me, social media is a great disappointment because of the dominance of trolls and the right wing,
mm-hmm.
The dominance of people like Elon Musk and Trump. I'm very committed to information exchange because I feel that people are greatly manipulated. Eugen Drewermont, who's a dissident Christian, theologian who's not allowed to preach, said that who you are is central, not what you should do. I think that's an exciting perspective.
Could you say that again? And the name of I'm not sure.
Yes, his name is Eugen Drewermont,
mm-hmm.
and he said who you should be is central, not what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
People can become frantic
right.
about being righteous or being moral. It's vital to see that Bethlehem isn't just a city 15 miles south of Jerusalem, but Bethlehem is in your heart. That God welcomes us and God is active when we are open. And when we resist the ego, resist the selfish concerns, and in a hyper-materialistic, hyper-individualistic culture,
yes,
and Santiago is absolutely right that the U.S. empire is in decline, and the ruling class refuses to accept that new reality. The reality of a multipolar existence, of sharing, learning from the global south.
Yes.
And abandoning our overconsumption.
Ah.
Seeing an alternative to the extraction economy.
And do you think that's possible? Are we able to see an alternative? I think you and Santiago are correct in terms of the U.S. and the empire declines. That's what empires do. They rise and decline. But
yes, and of course, England became a republic and accepted its lost empire. I think the hope is in the countervailing culture.
Mm.
Hope is not in our two political parties, which are really like a one-and-a-half party system, a corporate party. Michael Hudson, my favorite economist, said that the Democrats are really Republicans, and they're determined to block real leftist progressive thinking.
Yeah, today, Democrat, well, yes.
But, and I'll be a happy camper if Biden could endorse maybe two women like Kirsten Gillibrand and Elizabeth Warren and just rejoice in his very productive single term. I think that is possible, but people in the ruling class have trouble seeing reality, seeing the future. I don't think the powerful really experience peace. So we should distrust them, because 240 years of our history have been years of war.
Well,
so that's my two cents.
Okay, but before I let you go, what are signs of hope?
Well, the increasing consciousness of people, the young, is a source of hope that is a light that cannot be put out. In our prevailing system, the young are just excluded, and the interests of the top 1% or 10% are dominant. It's in the a countervailing culture where people recognize that we are wasteful and that most people have become superfluous.
Mm-hmm.
That housing is a crisis for the whole country, and if we could close 80% of the 800 bases, we might have resources to build affordable apartments.
Right.
That's my perspective.
Hey, thank you. Thank you so much, and for reminding us that you can give a good analysis of who we are, but maintain your integrity and also your inspiration and hope to make change.
Thank you. And visit the Central Downtown Library, which is like a community, like a country club for progressives. it's changed very much, and there's a depressurized atmosphere.
Well, yeah, it's just recently, you know, open, remodeled, and I'm told it's great. I have to go there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And you are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I've been your host today, Cecil Prescott. We've been talking about social media. We began our conversation by just reflecting on and lifting up Rachel Corey, a peace activist from Washington who 21 years ago was killed by Israeli bulldozers as she tried to prevent them from destroying a Palestinian home. She was someone who lived her life faithfully. Let me read her last email she wrote to her father, her last words. "Let me know if you have any ideas about what I should do with the rest of my life. I love you very much. If you want, you can write to me. As I was on vacation at a camp on the Big Island of Hawaii learning to weave. One thing I do to make things easier here is to utterly retreat into fantasies that I am in a Hollywood movie or a sitcom starring Michael J. Fox. So feel free to make something up, and I'll be happy to play along. Much love, Poppy. Rachel." Rachel, thank you for loving. Thank you for your action. Thank you for being you. Stay tuned. Thank you for listening. I'm Cecil Prescott.
is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. Meow, meow. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming